This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. While the absence of Wisconsin's 14 Democratic state senators has put a hold on the discussion of Governor Scott Walker's controversial budget repair bill in the Senate, the Wisconsin Assembly is poised to vote soon after more than two continuous days of debate on that bill. Joining us this past hour from the floor of the Assembly is Democratic State Representative Chris Dano, and in the studio, UW La Crosse political scientist Joe Heim. The two spoke with Wisconsin Public Radio's Maureen McCollum about politics these past 2 weeks here in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, Representative Dano, thank you so much for taking time out of your extremely busy schedule to join us. Just starting out, can I get some of your thoughts as to what's been going on in Wisconsin the last week and a half with the budget repair bill?
Yeah, I think it's quite frankly, it's been historic. I mean, I think quite frankly, some elements of the news media haven't covered it as well as they should. I think particularly some of our local television stations it's hard to understand. It truly is historic. There are more people demonstrating in the Capitol on a consistent, sustained basis than there probably have been maybe ever. Certainly, these demonstrations are larger than even on a daily basis, and some of the largest demonstrations during the anti-Vietnam War movement, which were in the Civil Rights Movement. So this is an extraordinarily, historic week. And what's amazing is these are regular, everyday folks. That's the thing I think that people really need to understand.
And can you tell us what that noise is going on in the background there?
Well, that's probably what you're hearing is debate on the floor, because I had to step off the floor to take the call.
And you said that currently the Assembly is debating some amendments for the budget repair bill. Can you talk about some of the amendments that the Democrats have proposed?
Yes. Yep.
And what are some of those?
Well, we've proposed amendments to obviously the most contentious issues were the collective bargaining portions, essentially taking away workers' rights from public employees, and we propose to remove those, to take those elements out of the bill, which I think, that's the part that's caught the most attention. There's other things in, though, that there are sales of state-owned property, particularly some power plants, with no bid contract, there are no bid sales. We needed some oversight on that. That was another one. I mean, that was very troubling. The other element in this that we tried to strip out, too, is the governor creates 37 new political appointees, basically crony positions. And we found that very troubling. In the same document, they're stripping away worker rights. They're adding in 35 new non-civil service positions. I mean, political appointees, which are basically anybody the governor wants with no real oversight. They basically work at the pleasure of the governor. And then there are other elements dealing with senior care, Badger care, Medicare, Medicaid eligibility requirements that basically, again, take any legislative oversight away from this legislative body and give it entirely over to the bureaucrat under the governor's control, and is going to allow him to basically, by fiat, be able to change the Medicare, Badger care, senior care requirements, and basically potentially take a lot of people off of senior care, Badger care, and things like that. Quite troubling.
And when you had talked about there are certain things that the media maybe hasn't been covering as well this week, are these some of the amendments that you're talking about?
Yes, yes.
And now we're joined by UWL political scientist Joe Heim. Joe, can I get your opinions as far as what's been going on in Wisconsin in the last week and a half? And as Representative Dano said, there are some issues within the budget repair bill that maybe haven't been reported on as much. So can we get some of your comments on that?
Well, it's fairly clear that this is not just a budget repair bill. That's the part that I think is somewhat troubling. There's a lot more into it. The legislature over the years has been trying to keep policy issues, for example, out of the state budget and let them be standalone pieces. And essentially what we have in this is not just a budget repair, but it's filled with all sorts of policy issues that have very little to do with financial stuff. The fact that it was also sprung on the legislature on a Friday, and the governor wanted this, and the majority party wanted this done by mid next week, the week after that, tells you they wanted to move along these policy issues very quickly, very fast, without any discussion. So including things, I just heard the representative talk about the 30-some positions that were essentially civil service being transferred to political appointees. Well, while that does create increased power for the governor and appointments, it essentially denigrates to some degree the civil service system as well. And that kind of thing could easily get buried in a budget of this sort. One of the things that I thought received very little attention, because this is supposed to be a budget repair, the collective bargaining stuff really isn't have a lot directly to do with money this, you know, between now and June 30th. Buried in this legislation is also something very close to a lot of faculty and academic staff on the UW campuses, and that's the right to collectively bargain. UW Superior, UW Eau Claire, La Crosse was going to vote on it this week, or is voting on it this week.
The UWL faculty just voted on it, and it did pass that faculty members will unionize at the UW La Crosse.
Well, they probably won't unionize if this budget repair bill goes through. But what was this doing in a budget repair bill? I have no clue. It has nothing to do with income. It has nothing to do with saving money between now and June 30th. Absolutely nothing.
And, Joe, I want to ask you about what's going on in the Senate. A lot of Republicans are saying the 14 Democrats who left the state are stifling democracy. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there's two sides to all these things, right? I think the majority party won the elections last fall. The governor is Republican. He has every right to carry out his proposals. Normally, however, you at least allow for a certain amount of discussion and sometimes bargaining and negotiating. In a democratic sense, one of the basic principles of democracy is to protect the rights of the minority. Regardless of who the minority is, you simply don't just ignore them. And if, for example, in this case, the governor said, I'm willing to talk to you, but I'm not going to negotiate anything because there's nothing to negotiate, that doesn't really smack of reaching out to the minority. One would assume that there's something involved in that. The governor had 53% of the vote last fall. That does not give you a mandate just to rule every way you want. Certainly you have a right to your agenda, but it doesn't mean that the minority doesn't have a right to be heard. So I have some sympathy for them, and this is apparently the only thing they felt they could do. All in all, however, the chips are really on the governor's side here. You have majority senators and assembly of his party. If, as long as they stay behind him, he's going to be able to pass pretty much what he wants. And at some point, those 14 senators in Illinois or wherever they are, they'll come back. I mean, they can't just do this indefinitely. And one would hope that maybe the governor might negotiate with him a little bit, and thus both sides could save some face here. I think some of this, they both backed themselves into the corner. And if neither happens, Illinois is going to pick up 14 new residents, or the governor is never going to pass a budget repair bill. So the budget repair, which I think is viewed as a necessity at this point, at least by the governor and Republicans, is going to be stymied unless something gives here. So some of this is not a total surprise.
And Chris, I want to ask you, 2 years ago, the Democrats controlled everything. And,
right.
You know, in the end, we still had a deficit. How were the relationship between the Democrats and the Republicans then? Did the Democrats make some concessions to the Republicans?
Well, you know, I think we did. I think, you know, I mean, a lot, you know, the majority does the yeoman's work. But you know, the thing I found more troubling, and this has become very obvious during our floor debates, actually, you know, the governor proposed a budget, and we as Democrats, actually, legislative Democrats, made substantial changes to that budget. I mean, substantial changes. Not only in, you know, one of the big things I'm very proud of was getting school sparsity aid formulas added to the budget to protect my rural school districts, and the governor did not include that in his original budget. What's been very difficult and very frightening here is the comments that are coming from the majority part, the Republicans, is they are literally, they've actually got up and said, we're going to do what the governor tells us to. The governor thinks this is what he needs to do, we're going to do it. And I got very frustrated, actually, yesterday during debate when they got up and said that. I said, we are a co-equal branch of government here. Now, this is fourth grade civics. We do not rubber stamp the governor. We have the ability to change legislation, and the governor does not rule by fiat. I said quite angrily to them, why don't you just all go home and let the governor's staff come over and vote for you if that's what you want? Because that's where we're going. And that's what troubles me. You know, and I listened also to that tape that probably you've all heard about where the governor's
prank phone call.
Yeah, 20 minutes with a person he thought was a major campaign contributor, a billionaire from New York. And, you know, he said some things that I found very disturbing. He talked about that they had considered, that the governor himself and his people had considered putting thugs or tr- troublemakers into the crowd to stir up trouble. The only reason they chose not to do it was because they thought it would be politically disadvantageous, not because of the public safety issues involved, but because it would be politically disadvantageous to them. They talked about, you know, he basically accepted a free trip to California from this character in exchange for crushing the unions. I mean, this, and then he talked about how he planned on essentially trying to lure the senators back to Wisconsin, and he's talking about how he does not plan to negotiate in good faith and bargain in good faith, and that's also very troubling. I mean, we elect a governor, and he's a very powerful person, but we do expect some level of reasonableness and a willingness to compromise and bargain in good faith with people, and I think that's what everybody wants.
So would you say it's unfair, and why is it unfair that the Republicans are kind of pushing these bills through that they say will balance the budget?
Well, that's, I think Joe mentioned that very well. These are not really about balancing the budget. We actually have a substitute amendment that we are introducing that will deal with all the fiscal situations and removes all the policy and will actually leave more money left over fiscally than the governor's proposal does.
And Joe, would you like to comment on that?
Well, I basically agree with it. The one thing I think I'd comment on is that the first 6 months or so of a new governor's term, you have sort of a honeymoon period. The public generally will be behind a new governor, regardless of what he does. There's general support because, you know, he's new, and he's going to have his new agenda. And clearly this is a change in direction from all Democratic state legislature, state governor, to all Republican. So you're going to expect a certain amount of changes as a result of that. But I sense, and Republicans tend to be, maybe Chris won't agree with this, but I think Republicans tend to be a little more united as a party as opposed to Democrats.
Oh, true. We joke about it as drinking the Kool-Aid, but they tend to be much more ideological. I think they're more ideologically uniform in many ways, too, than Democrats are right now. I mean, they're definitely all very conservative. I think Democrats have taken a broader range of political personalities in many ways, I think that's for sure.
Well, my understanding, Chris, is that many of the Republicans that were elected really were elected on a fiscal conservative platform, and even the Republican Party would admit that they've taken a bit of a turn to the right.
Oh, sure.
But being unified behind the governor, especially the first 6 months or so, is not terribly uncommon.
And you're listening to Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. Joining me today is UWL political scientist Joe Heim and Assembly Democrat from Trempealeau, Chris Dano, who's taking some time off from the Assembly's debate of the budget repair bill. Chris, I want to ask you, as the former president of the Onalaska Professional Police Association, can you talk about your history with collective bargaining between your organization and the city of Onalaska?
Oh, sure. I mean, it was critical. And, you know, we had some serious problems with our with my former boss a few years ago. And, you know, he chose to become very confrontational with my fellow officers. And, you know, we dealt with that through the union through the union grievance process.
And this was beyond this was more than talking about pay.
This was about, you know, basically trying to fire people without good cause and that sort of thing. What ended up happening is it was our union attorneys that defended two of those officers, and both those officers were completely exonerated. In both cases, the rulings came down from either police and fire commissioner or circuit court judge that the chief was completely in the wrong there. And I don't think that would have happened if there had not been a union representation for those officers. The other element that they don't talk about with unions is it deals with everything from your lunch breaks, being able to use the bathroom, to seniority, and all that sort of stuff. I mean, really the basic working conditions of what your job is like. And, you know, that all that is gone if your union contract is gone. And that is more than just money and benefits. I mean, it's basically the way you do your job. It also has a lot to do with safety on the job and things like that. And, you know, it was unions that led to a lot of improvements in safety. For a long time, for instance, the city of Onalaska, this was prior to when I was there, they refused to purchase their officers, you know, bullet-resistant vests. And it was the union that basically said, look, you guys need to step up and pay for this.
Chris, one of the comments that I've heard from the governor is that, and the legislature, is that after the bill was introduced, the Joint Finance did modify it and add some civil service protections regarding grievances and job protections. Could you comment on those changes?
Yeah, you know, those changes were essentially completely inadequate. You know, we have one of our colleagues is actually Judge Fred Kessler, and he literally does a labor arbitration and mediation professional. He's a mediator arbitrator. And he took one look at those and said, these are completely inadequate. They essentially do nothing. If a city does not have a policy or process in place, they don't mean much. And the other element is there's no outside third party. Even if there is a process, that person that's supposed to judge that process can be appointed by the employer. You know, so it'd be like basically you have a problem with the police chief, and then you're going to go in front of the mayor to make the decision. I mean, that's not a fair process.
So you don't see these modifications in the budget repair bill as being very adequate?
No, they're completely inadequate, completely inadequate.
Hmm. Joe, I want to ask you a question. Is there such thing as a filibuster in state government? And if there is this the closest thing we've ever come to seeing that in Wisconsin?
It's a version of it. Chris could probably talk more about that than me. Oftentimes in legislation where it comes to the floor, for example, I know in the Assembly they do this, establish a rule on it, which allows you only to talk for 1 or 2 minutes or 5 minutes, or they'll have a time limit on an amendment. Those are designed to limit the ability of the other side to filibuster. The Senate, I honestly am not sure whether they do that, whether they do allow for, in fact, a real filibuster. You know, at the federal level, it's all you have to do now is say, I'm going to filibuster this, and then they don't even bother. If you know they're not going to have 60 votes, it sort of dies. In a way, I'd like to see them go back to the real filibusters where you have to stay up all night and talk.
Read through the phone book.
But I'm not sure, maybe Chris knows what the issue is. Can you filibuster in the state Senate, Chris?
I don't know about the Senate. That's so much. I mean, and what we're doing, I mean, some people are trying to, the Republicans are trying to call it a filibuster. I kind of differ with that. We really did offer a series of amendments. I mean, quite frankly, we want to kill this thing. I mean, our goal is to... I think there's some softness on the part of the Republicans over there. I think there's some folks, particularly some of the more senior members, that really are very uncomfortable with this. And part of our job is to literally go out there and try and persuade them to change their mind. And by, partly what you do by offering these amendments is you basically kind of break the bill up into its component parts. And you point out what's wrong with each individual component of that bill by offering an amendment to address the components that we consider that we feel are you know, problematic. And then what you do is you have a debate on the problems, and you say, look, this is a problem. It should be fixed. Let's fix it. And then, of course, unfortunately, they haven't accepted any of our amendments.
Have any Republicans voted for any of the amendments?
A couple have voted for a couple of the amendments, yes.
Am I correct that sometimes these types of amendment voting show up in campaigns?
Oh, certainly, yeah. I think, though, this whole bill is so poisonous, I can't imagine it's not going to show up in virtually every campaign everywhere. Particularly any representative or state senator who has any substantial amount of public employees in his district is going to hurt them. Even among you, you know, they say unions are supposedly strongly Democratic voting, but even during the last election, 38-40% of union members voted for Republican. So, at least as far as I know, is what I've seen. I suspect that may change substantially in the next couple of years. I mean, to some extent, this is a game changer in many ways. I mean, there are people out here that, you know, I mean, police officers and firefighters tend to be pretty conservative guys, and they're out there in droves. I mean, when they're off duty, and really saying they don't, even though they're exempted from the elimination of collective bargaining, and I think partly because the governor knows he needs these guys to keep order if things really go south. And that's the thing that scares me. We are potentially on the verge of some serious labor strife in this state. We have not had labor strife in Wisconsin really since the 1970s, when they went to mediation arbitration to resolve disputes. And so I think we're standing on the edge of something potentially very explosive in many ways. I hope it doesn't happen. I hope it doesn't get there. But these are people's backs are being put against the wall here, and that's never a good situation.
And Chris, we only have a couple minutes left,
sure.
But Walker is supposed to introduce his budget address on Tuesday. Do you see things getting any better, or what do you predict for the future?
Well, you know, that I think is the really unfortunate thing. I'll be honest. I have now dealt with this governor. I've spoken with him in person a couple times. And after this, I don't feel I can trust him. And I'm trying to be as blunt as I can. I do not believe I can trust him and take him at his word. And that's a real problem. You know, I don't have a problem disagreeing with him ideologically. We're going to differ. We're going to have different perspectives. But he has not been honest with me, you know, and I don't think he's been honest in his dealings with with the people of the state. When he constantly talks about that this is about the budget repair, and clearly it's not. And when you listen to that conversation he had with the person he thought was one of his, a billionaire campaign contributor, he makes it clear he thinks this is his moment to break unions. That is what he wants to do. I mean, this is his Ronald Reagan moment, like Patco in 1980, to break unions. And that somehow this is going to springboard him into some national future, I think. And it concerns me. I mean, I really do worry about what he's up to. And I have a difficult time trusting him. Now, I do.
And Joe, do you have any final thoughts?
The one thing I guess I would add is that Governor Walker was executive of Milwaukee County. And, we're all products of our experiences. And my understanding is that part of his experience has come from a number of great fights in the city and in the county against unions. And I think he maybe has a tainted view of what unions do. And maybe he had some problems there and some excesses of unions there. And I think he's brought this to the state capitol. Unfortunately, I'm not sure, what goes on in Milwaukee doesn't necessarily go on in the rest of the state. I do think that the budget repair bill is misnamed. It's clearly not that, and it's much more than that. And I think it was a part of a strategy that he was following to lead in. It's fairly clear that the state of Wisconsin is in a fiscally very difficult position, and he has vowed to clean up what essentially was decades of fiscal irresponsibility. I guess I can't say it any other way. And he's vowed to carry that on. And I think from his perspective, he's doing exactly what he promised to do. The details, of course, were not necessarily released a lot earlier.
All right. Well, I want to thank both of you very much. Chris Dano, Democratic Assembly Member from Trempealeau, and I hope you get some sleep eventually.
thank you.
And UWL political scientist Joe Heim. Thank you so much to the two of you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
State Assembly Member Chris Dano joined us from the floor of the Assembly at the State Capitol in Madison. Professor Joe Heim was in our studios with Wisconsin Public Radio's Maureen McCollum. A reminder that Wisconsin Public Radio reporters are state employees, but not members of a union. We invite you to stay tuned to Wisconsin Public Radio News for late word and updates on the votes and the discussions and debates going on at the State Capitol in Madison. Still to come on Newsmakers, a new survey of regional needs is getting underway this week, sponsored by the Great Rivers United Way. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, we invite you to visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have a suggestion for future shows, follow the links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto.